It's time for Ruination Repeat, recapping last week's shows.
I'm not the only one who could use a little bit more of the big fatty.
Oh, dear Gussie, dear Gussie, dear sweet Gussie.
Welcome to this week's Ruination Repeat.
Yes, welcome.
I mean, imagine you're turning 70, right? Do you expect, like, a quiet dinner with family or a global, completely decentralized network of strangers mailing you gay hockey romance novels and highly vulgar cakes?
Yeah, usually it's the quiet dinner.
Right. But today we are exploring the audio records from the Big Fatty online universe, specifically the week of August 10th through August 14th, 2026.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to figure out how a retired man living alone has somehow engineered this unbreakable global safety net. I am King.
And I am Gail. And we are really pulling apart the mechanics of this community because it operates at just this fierce loyalty.
It really does. And we are looking at a monumental week in this timeline for you to wrap your head around. It is Big Fatty's 70th celebration of what he clinically refers to as exiting the birth canal.
Exiting the birth canal, yes.
Which is just a great phrase. And it also happens to be the 17th anniversary of the show itself.
Which is massive in the podcasting space.
Oh, totally. But okay, before we get into the architecture of this huge milestone, we have to lay down the absolute non-negotiable law of this universe.
Right, the anchor. If you want to understand the flow of time here, you have to know this.
Exactly. So here is your mandatory reminder. Big Brother is on Sunday, Wednesday, and Thursday nights.
Sunday, Wednesday, Thursday.
Just put it in your calendar. Do not schedule a phone call with anyone. Big Brother is on Sunday, Wednesday, and Thursday nights. It dictates the heartbeat of this entire digital world.
It's the clock they all run on.
Exactly. So let's look at the physical reality of hitting a major life milestone. Like, when someone turns 70, the physical world can sometimes feel, I don't know, a bit isolating.
Yeah, a lot of people feel that way.
But what we see here is how a digital community completely manifests their affection in the real physical world. He kicks off the week with his birth origin story.
Oh, this story is so good.
Right. He claims that when he was born, the doctor didn't slap him to get him to cry. The doctor actually turned around and slapped his mother instead.
Which is just, I mean, telling that specific story right out of the gate is this brilliant piece of personal lore.
Yeah. Why do you think he starts with that?
Because it instantly undercuts any sort of, you know, self-serious grandiosity about turning 70.
Right, he's not being reverent about it.
Exactly. He refuses to treat his own aging process with reverence, and it sets this tone of self-deprecation. It basically gives his audience permission to interact with him on a very grounded, almost messy level.
And oh man, the audience takes that permission and just runs with it.
They really do.
The physical gifts pouring into his home, which he calls the Frugal Fortress, are just staggering in their specificity.
So specific.
Like, Daddy Ron sends this mechanical card covered in puppy dogs and kitty cats, along with a gift card to what Big Fatty refers to as a lesbian delivery service.
Well, it'd be a delivery service, right?
Yeah. And then Captain D and Alan, they send an official Big Brother mug.
Which ties right back into the mandatory schedule.
Exactly. And Amoose P sends this huge care package. It includes a skeleton card, a Wicked Witch of the East bookmark, and physical copies of the gay hockey romance books.
Oh, heated rivalry in the long game, right?
Yes. Heated rivalry in the long game. I mean, who gets that for their 70th?
Well, notice how targeted those gifts are, though.
Yeah, very.
They don't reflect an audience buying, like, generic Hallmark cards from the drugstore. They reflect an audience that completely consumes his narrative. They know his media diet, and they track his exact brand of humor.
Spot on. And it keeps going. Alex and Brandon send a beautiful box of assorted Italian-Mexican chocolates.
Sounds delicious, honestly.
Right. But then the peak of this birthday influx, it comes from Holly and Casey.
Oh my gosh, the cake.
The cake. They send a picture of a cake that features a dripping antenna, quote unquote, made of icing, complete with extremely large testicles.
Just incredible.
And he describes it to this global audience with just sheer delight.
He loves it.
He does. But I want to propose a theory to you about what he does next on the show.
Okay, lay it on me.
So amidst all these physical gifts, he spends a massive amount of broadcast time tracking the exact geographic locations of his listener.
Right, the map pins.
Yeah. He notes that Apple Potomus from Atlanta just dropped a new pin on the community's map at podcastmaps.com.
Mm-hmm.
He tracks Brian up in Chicago, and he specifically highlights his, quote, straight boyfriends like Phil, formerly of Oregon, and straight Bob, all the way down in Melbourne.
That's a huge spread.
Right, it's global. But I look at this meticulous tracking, and at first glance, I'm like, is he running a global census bureau?
Right, why list all these places?
Exactly, but I'm starting to wonder if this isn't like a survival tactic. By naming these pins, is he trying to prove he exists in a world that often just ignores older men living alone?
Your instinct is spot on there. I really think this tracking is the core architecture of his survival.
How so?
Well, think about how a computer hard drive creates redundant backups so you don't lose vital data.
Okay.
When you live alone, memories and daily milestones can easily just vanish into a void. There's no one there to witness them.
Right, because there's no one in the house with you.
Exactly. Mm. So by reading out the exact geographic location of, you know, Apple Potomus dropping a map pin, he is essentially saving a backup of his own existence on this decentralized network of human beings.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that network acts as a human hard drive. Naming the exact locations validates his chosen family and creates a tightly woven safety net that anchors him to the physical world.
A human hard drive. That is a brilliant way to look at it. So let's test that safety net against what's happening outside his front door that week.
Because the real world doesn't stop for your birthday.
It definitely doesn't. The birthday love pours in, but the physical world outside the frugal fortress is just chaotic. A 40-year friendship is basically shifting, illustrated by the departure of his longtime friend, the Nip.
The Nip, yeah. That's a huge change.
Massive. Big Fatty provides tech support, wiping the Nip's phone for a trade-in, shipping it via what he calls Fred X.
Fred X, yeah.
And then, at the ass crack of dawn, the Nip leaves in the back of a pickup truck with three friends and a puppy.
A puppy.
Yeah. For a grueling 4,358-mile drive to Fairbanks, Alaska.
I mean, a physical relocation of that magnitude, it leaves a massive void. It removes a localized dynamic that has spanned four decades for him.
Four decades. And the updates from this Alaskan journey are visceral, to say the least.
Very visceral.
Big Fatty actually reads a text message from the Nip out loud to the audience.
He doesn't hold back.
No. The Nip reports suffering from vile-smelling, explosive diarrhea at a roadside convenience store in northern Mexico, terrified there is more liquid to come.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. It feels like a chaotic, grotesque road movie directed by John Waters. It's just pure biological panic.
It really is.
But then he juxtaposes this biological chaos immediately with the strict mathematics of his Thursday grocery run.
Ah, the Bonzi's run.
The Bonzi's run. On Thursday, he goes to the Bonzi's grocery store. And he confidently reports spending exactly $36.89, but saving $33.84.
That is an impressive ratio.
Right. And he does it by utilizing buy one, get one free deals on strawberry cream cheese, Ruffles potato chips, Green Giant veggies, and Ben & Jerry's cookie dough bars.
The essentials, obviously.
Obviously. Yeah. But it's like watching that John Waters film suddenly get interrupted by a CPA giving a PowerPoint presentation on coupon yields. It's jarring.
It is jarring. But this contrast illustrates the frugal fortress defense mechanism perfectly in action.
Defense mechanism.
Yeah. He willingly shares the grotesque biological reality of his friends to neutralize human shame.
Okay. I see.
Because think about it. If you can broadcast a text about explosive diarrhea in Mexico to thousands of people without flinching, you completely remove the power of embarrassment.
That makes a lot of sense. You just own it.
Right. Biology is unpredictable and messy. Math, however, is predictable. He uses the unyielding mathematics of those Budogo coupons to exert agency over a chaotic economy.
Wow.
Inflation and biological decay are terrifying forces, right? But saving $33.84 on strawberry cream cheese is a tangible victory. It proves he still controls his domain.
I want to pull on that thread of control for a second, because if you have mathematically eliminated chaos from your immediate physical life down to the penny on Ruffles, you still have a human craving for friction.
Oh, for sure. We all need a little drama.
Right. So I hypothesize that this is why he meticulously tracks television and sports. He's outsourcing his need for drama to a synthetic environment because he starved his real life of it.
It's a necessary escape valve.
Totally. Like, we hear him tracking the sports ball, the Atlanta Braves sweep the Miami Marlins, beating the living hell out of them.
Great for him.
But then he suffers the whiplash of watching them lose to the Metropolitans, who managed to score 5 runs in the very first inning.
Ouch. 5 runs in the first inning is rough.
It is. But sports are just the appetizer here. He dives incredibly deep into tracking Big Brother.
As we established, the anchor of the week.
Yes. He details how the witch Haley's master plans are ruined during the live eviction. He recounts a puzzle-building competition involving cartoon dogs where Drew wins the Puppy Patrol puzzle.
Right, the Puppy Patrol.
Which leads to a blind side where a contestant named Lyric is voted out in an 8-3 vote.
Brutal.
And later, L.A., the older woman in the house, wins a grueling wall endurance competition against Drew and the heavily tattooed Camus.
Good for L.A., honestly.
Right. L.A. takes power and nominates Barrett, Chuck, and Haley. He even mentions Josh and the drag queen Jason loudly banging pots and pans on the recap show.
It's just constant chaos.
Constant. But I have to ask, why dedicate so much precious birthday bandwidth to reality TV drama like Haley the Witch? Doesn't that distract from his actual 70th birthday?
Well, no, because reality television provides a hermetically sealed environment for someone who lives an intensely regulated life. Backstabbing, betrayal, and emotional implosions, they happen on a rigid schedule Sunday, Wednesday, and Thursday.
Like clockwork.
Exactly. He can enjoy the visceral thrill of human conflict, rooting for the downfall of the witch, without suffering any actual consequences himself.
So he gets the high without the hangover.
Exactly. It provides the adrenaline of chaos while he remains perfectly safe inside the frugal fortress.
I love that. So he gets his synthetic drama from television, but then we get a jarring pivot to his unvarnished intimate life.
Oh, yes.
And he signals this transition with a very specific retro audio cue.
The mystery date board game theme.
Yes.
Yeah.
By playing this slightly eerie, nostalgic jingle, he transforms his mundane domestic space into a theatrical romantic arena, which he actually calls the Love Chamber.
The Love Chamber. It's so good.
It is. And this week, he reports on 2 distinct gentleman callers. First, a 35-year-old DoorDash driver arrives on a bicycle.
A man he hasn't seen in over a year, I think he noted.
Right, over a year. And second, he has a visit from a construction worker, and he makes sure to detail this man's highly specific haircut.
The haircut was very specific.
It was a mullet mixed with a mohawk, shaved short on the sides with a ponytail in the back.
What a visual.
Truly. And he notes this gentleman caller visits for well over an hour.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to challenge the aesthetic choices he makes as a broadcaster here.
Oh, how so?
Well, he frames an hour-long intimate encounter with a mullet mohawk construction worker. And then in the exact next breath, he's reviewing sweet tea and lemonade float ice cream.
Right.
Specifically noting the green tea flavor, the lemon curd swirls, and the white chocolate chunks.
Delicious details, though.
Sure. And then he details going to a Thai restaurant near the big circle with Durwood in the nip enjoying a bowl of pho.
Yeah.
He documents washing his bed sheets.
Yeah, just laundry day.
So I just wonder, doesn't burying a romantic encounter between doing laundry and eating soup just completely strip the magic out of the human experience?
See, I think it achieves the exact opposite. Yeah. This tonal whiplash democratizes the human experience.
How do you mean?
Well, society dictates that romance and sexuality must be elevated, right?
Yeah.
Hidden behind closed doors, discussed in hushed, glamorous tones.
Sure.
By refusing to artificially elevate a romantic hookup above a grocery run for strawberry cream cheese or, you know, laundering sheets, he removes societal shame entirely.
Oh, wow. I hadn't thought of it like that.
Yeah. He suggests that sex, eating pho, washing sheets, and dealing with digestive issues are all just equal parts of being a biological human. Everything is just treated as standard daily weather.
Standard daily weather. That is a really profound way to live, honestly.
It is.
And that philosophy really culminates at the end of the week. The digital community is converging in physical space for the hot dog down the hallway weekend at the Har Hotel.
Yes, the big meetup.
You can just feel the momentum building in the audio records as the global network prepares to meet face to face. He highlights Granny's heroic logistical feat for the party.
Granny is busy.
So busy. She prepared 100 shots for the guests, a mix of creamsicle, peanut butter and jelly, and margarita flavors.
I mean, moving a digital chosen family into a physical hotel environment requires exactly that level of tactile preparation.
It really does. And Big Fatty, ever the pragmatist, makes a firm prediction on the broadcast. He predicts that Gay Country West, who is driving in for just a day pass, will absolutely not be in any condition to drive back to Cumming, Georgia.
Not after surviving the pool party and a dozen of granny shots.
No way. But even as he prepares for this massive physical collision of listeners, he continues tending to the digital community through the Ask Big Fatty segment.
Which is such a staple.
And the interactions are so quirky. Chris from Tennessee calls in to ask about the etymological origin of the Nip nickname.
Mm-hmm.
Miss Bacon declares absolute war on the ants in her house, threatening them as if they aren't paying the mortgage.
Which is hilarious.
And Gary Bearding calls from the Rainbow Vista Library to say he's checking out the Apple the First 50 Years book, all based on Big Fatty's recommendation.
Oh, and Scotty the Aussie Battler.
Yes. Scotty the Aussie Battler calls from the UK to claim his prize for winning the SOS Question Month literally ages ago.
Ages ago, yeah.
So I have to ask you, why do Miss Bacon's Ants or Gary's Library book carry the same narrative weight on this show as a 70th birthday celebration?
Because radical honesty builds the protective barrier.
Explain that.
The inside jokes, the shared frustrations over household pests, the book recommendations, they all act as the connective tissue of this community.
Right.
It proves that sharing the mundane details, the coupons, the diarrhea texts, the gentleman callers, it doesn't push people away, it draws them closer.
It's intimacy through the mundane.
Exactly. It transforms passive listeners into a fiercely protective chosen family that safely carries him into his 70th year.
It truly is an incredible display of momentum and loyalty. It really is.
Absolutely.
Well, before we sign off, I want to leave you with a challenge to mull over as you go about your day.
Yes, think about this one.
Think about the lurkers in your own life. The distant relatives, the old coworkers silently watching your social media stories, the people who observe you but never interact.
We all have them.
We do. If you dropped the filters today completely and documented your unvarnished truth for a single week, the messy, unmade sheets, the catastrophic digestive disasters, the penny-pinching coupon clipping, the awkward dates, would you push those lurkers away in disgust?
Or
would you accidentally build an unbreakable community that fiercely protects the real you?
It really forces us to question the actual power of authenticity.
It does. It really does. Thank you so much for tuning in to this week's Ruination Repeat. I'm King.
And I'm Gail.
We invite you back right here for next Sunday's show, where we will continue to explore the beautiful, messy reality of this universe. See you then.
We'll see you next Sunday here on Ruination Repeat.